The golden age of buccaneering began to decline after 1680, when an increasingly hostile legal and political environment developed as the European countries found that the privateering wolves unleashed among the Spanish sheep did not always distinguish between Spanish and English, French or Dutch. What had been a cost-effective mechanism for challenging the Spanish both commercially and politically in the Americas had become a threat to their own commercial and political interests in the area. After 1680, with the passage of anti-piracy laws in Jamaica, a pirate could be executed simply for being a pirate. The English Act of Piracy of 1699 also allowed colonial courts to try sea robbers rather than sending them to England. Pirate Captain William Kidd was executed in 1701 as a result of this change in the political climate. Even though efforts at pirate repression began in the 1680s, it was not until 1716 that a genuine campaign began to stamp out piracy in the Caribbean. As historian Peter Earle noted, between 1716 and 1726 alone, English authorities hanged at least 400 pirates, a colossal number even in an age notorious for its love of the gallows. These extermination efforts were largely successful, and after 1730, even though piracy continued, it never enjoyed the freedom it had experienced in the 16th and 17th centuries. The substantial decline in transatlantic shipping rates between the 16th and 18th centuries reflected largely the decline in piracy and the reduction in both risk and security outlays to protect transatlantic shipping lanes. How well did the English strategy of encouraging piracy against Catholic flagships work? Remarkably, historians unanimously agree that piracy was not a very effective way to redirect Spanish wealth from the New World. With a few notable exceptions, Dutch and English buccaneering and attempts to seize territories in the Caribbean were largely defeated by Spain's rebuilt navy and her improved intelligence networks. Over the course of 150 years, some 90% of the Spanish treasure ships managed to fulfill their mission and deliver precious metals and other valuable commodities from the Americas to Spain. But the interesting thing is that all his success at repelling Protestant piracy came at a price for Spanish King Philip. By 1596, Spain was basically bankrupt, even as more silver and gold were shipped safely to Spain than ever before. The main problem was that the Spanish monarchy overspent its wealth. Spain would manage to continue its military efforts around the world for another century, but Spain would grow increasingly reliant on the precious metals and jewels brought from the Americas. The Spanish, despite being the wealthiest nation in Europe at the time, simply could not afford a sufficient military presence to control such a vast area of ocean or enforce their exclusionary mercantilist trading laws. What was the problem with all this wealth? The influx of all this new gold and silver had created a price revolution in Spain, rapidly inflating the costs of all goods. At the same time, content to reap the harvest of a seemingly never-ending supply of precious metals from the New World, Spain failed to advance in other key ways. Meanwhile, to compete with Spain and Catholic Europe, England and the Netherlands led the Industrial Revolution and attained through increased industrial output and productivity what the Spanish and Portuguese had obtained through precious metals and trade. So that a century later, as the Spanish dominion over the Americas declined, so too did the rate of return from investment in precious metals as the mines simply ran dry. After the first decades of the Age of Discovery, piracy played a key role not so much in the interdiction of Spanish wealth, but in the security reactions piracy had provoked. The Spanish cost of defending its far-flung empire grew, which was fine so long as the mines of gold and silver held out. But as soon as the mines dried up, the Spanish empire fell into irreversible decline. The lesson learned from the perspective of the history of espionage? Sometimes it is less important to succeed in stealing the wealth away from your enemies than it is to drive up the costs of their national defense. In the 20th century, we have observed the impact of exorbitant costs of empire and the relative decline of England and France following World War II, in the Soviet Union by the 1980s, and many argue the United States today. The lesson? If you want to spend lavishly on policing the world or on national defense, you must sustain an economic base sufficient to support it. If you don't build an economy to sustain the long-term costs of military actions, then inevitable declines will follow. World history is a graveyard filled with fallen empires that failed to heed that message.
This ends Lecture 7.